Being a good parent isn't just about having a set of skills or knowing the right thing to do all the time. Ask any good parent you know. They can tell you their pro tips, but most are happy to admit that a lot of parenting feels like winging it. Who we are and how we continue to grow matters because our kids pick up most of what they learn from us by watching how we do things, not by listening to our instructions. So join me on this journey of remodeling our mindsets so that our actions speak to those watching. I'm Dr. Dina Shelton, and this is Remodel Parenting. Hey everyone, welcome back to Remodel Parenting. We are continuing in our Lessons from Classic Research. Today I'm going to talk about selective attention. Now, this episode is a bit different from others. It's an episode on selective attention, a particular study, but this one's really cool because you can experience part of it if you want to. So in the episode description, there's a link to a 1.5 minute video that was used in this study. The instructions are to watch and see if you can count the number of times that the people wearing white pass the basketball between them. If you're able to, you should pause this episode. Go click on the link and watch it. It's about a minute on the front part. They tell a little bit about the research on the back. See how you do. It's totally worth it. And I'm going to break down what's happening in it afterwards. And so I would love for you to take part in that beforehand. I'm going to pause and let you do that. Okay, I hope that you were able to pause and take part in that. Is your mind blown? For those of you who can't stop the recording and watch this video, I am going to discuss it, and you won't be able to go back and experience it for yourself if you hear about it first, but you can show the clip to somebody else and see it maybe happen in front of you. The clip shows you 6 young adults. 3 are in black sweatshirts, and 3 are in white sweatshirts. Each group is passing a basketball only to those wearing the same color, and all of them are moving around continuously in a very small space. Now, it moves at a moderate pace, and most people get really close to the number of actual passes when they're watching the video. At the end, the video reveals the number of passes between the white shirt group, and then asks the question that confuses most people. It asks, "But did you see the gorilla?" People watch the video again, expecting to see a gorilla maybe peek into the screen, or be somewhere small in the background that they just didn't pick up on, but they're shocked to see that in the middle of all of the activity, a man in a full gorilla suit walks into the full frame of the video, into the middle of the group of 6, stands in the middle, beats his chest, and then walks off to the other side of the screen. He's on screen for a full 10 seconds. In 1999, researchers Simons and Chablis at Harvard used this video to study awareness and attention. The majority of people didn't see the gorilla at all. While others did see and notice it, there were a lot of conclusions drawn about the results, and including why some people may have seen it when most people did not. First, the researchers noted that attention and focus creates a spotlight on what we perceive. It can darken other things around the area where we're focusing. And second, it really highlighted how inconsistent our minds are, and they don't work like we think they do. We think we see the world as it is, but in reality, we miss a whole lot of things. We tend to believe that when we have recollection of events or situations that we were a part of, that we are remembering them exactly as they are, and that if our brain recalls and pulls that information, that it will bring it back to our memory and sequence it in a way that is accurate and exact. Now, I'll pause here and say that that is definitely not true. We know more about how memory works now than we ever have before, and we understand that rather than seeing memory and understanding memory as a big room of file cabinets in our brains, where if we want a memory, we move to, you know, the year file cabinet and peek through the files to see if we can pull out what's there and pull out something that is more concrete and specific. We know that our brain actually reconstructs and rebuilds memories as we grow and move along. And every time we recall something or pull it to memory, our brain is actually rebuilding it and recreating it, which is why it's very easy for memories to shift over time. I mean, think about it. Have you ever said something in your family and said something that you remembered and everyone else said, that's not how it happened? Or that didn't happen the way that you're saying it happened, or maybe didn't happen at all. Those happen a lot. And sometimes we can code dreams or other even portions of dreams, and they can become like memories of recall. But it's even possible to just recall things that we have been told or handed as though they are our own memories. There was research done at one point on memories to see if you could implant memories in people's brains. And they had people who'd never broken a window with a baseball mentalize and visualize themselves as a child breaking a window with a baseball or playing baseball or something. And they followed up on studies with these people. And later, some of the people said that it actually happened, even though part of taking part in the study was that they had to do something that had never happened before. And this situation had never happened to them. So it's really interesting how that works. And we put a lot more stock and a lot more trust in ours and others' memories than maybe we should sometimes. Finally, this selective attention study also shows the limits of our awareness and explains that even if we are certain about what we've observed, it doesn't mean that it is certain. It underscores the dangers of certainty in our own mental capacities, and it really urges us to consider being less sure and complements that mentality is a more healthy approach to our existence and in engagement with other people. Because if we can temper our perceptions and memories with the understanding that those aren't as solid and certain as we typically place stock in them, then we're more open to connection with other people, and we can take a step back from just the concept and ideas of what is right and wrong, and it can prevent more issues from holding tight to things that may not have been as we perceive them. This study has always been fascinating to me. I saw the video early on and have used it in several teaching capacities. And it is such a fun one to do with other people because when you hand them the video and just sit with them to watch it and they're counting, and at the end, the question about the gorilla comes up, they would swear to you that the majority of people will swear to you that there's no gorilla in the video at all. And when they realize or when they're told that there is one that comes into the full screen, a lot of people will get pretty defensive and say, no, there was not. And it's almost like you have to backtrack the same video and show them in real time for them to believe that it is the same video and not a different screening of the video. It can't just play again. I did that once with a class and played it again. And a large number of people said, that's not the same clip. And so being able to rewind it and show it to them in real time, it takes a lot to convince someone that they missed something that seems that significant. Now, how does this translate to our lives and parenting? Consider how often we've been told things by other people, or other people have told us things and we know, or we believe that it's not how it happened or it's not how it went. How often do we remember things from childhood or remember engagements or interactions with other people? And when we maybe share portions of them, people don't remember them quite the same way. Now, what does that mean? Does it just mean we have no helpful facts or we can't trust anything about what we remember? No, that's not what it means. Because perception and our experience matters because for all intents and purposes, it does become our reality. And we have to work with what is real to us, but we can't get locked into what our perceptions and memories and realities are in terms of labeling them as objective truth. That our perceptions and our experiences are valuable and they get to have the space that they have because that's what they are and they're important. And also, we do not have to hold tight to say they're valuable or important because they are quintessentially accurate in all facets of being. And so, as we move this into being parents and to raising children, the gorilla is representative. It's pretty interesting, and it's an obvious visual representative of how our brains can block out something that's seemingly obvious and can't be unseen again when you know about it. Once you've done a study like this, if you go into another type of study, even if it's completely different circumstances, situations, you're way less likely to not notice the element that is in the picture. There's another study like this of a man on a unicycle in a big open park area. and you're looking for things and kind of counting things in a park, and people miss the guy riding around. I think he's a clown, maybe even riding around on a unicycle. It's pretty obvious when you do see it, but then you can't unsee it. And you don't have the same type of blinding to these types of videos because our brains take in what we learn and we build on it. With our children, as good and engaged parents, we're tracking and attuning to their needs and experiences, and we're tapping into what's going on with them. But we do so in a way that tracks with our own brains and our own attention. So I might have a tendency to get hyper-focused on something about my child for a wide variety of reasons and lose sight of or not pay attention to other things that could be more important to their experience, their perception of their experience. An example would be a parent might get very concerned about a child's experiences with feeling left out or being made fun of because they experienced it as a child and it was very painful. And then they begin to look for that to try and prevent their children from experiencing the same level of pain. The intent is very good to tune in and to care for their children in a way that they may not have felt like they were connected to. But what that can also do is create a situation where when a child brings home stories from school, I may filter them through a lens and assume feelings and experiences that my child may have that really aren't their feelings or experiences. Not all people are the same. And even though there are categorically some things like, you know, anybody who is being made fun of, that's not a pleasant experience. That's not a positive thing. And any type of bullying or consistent, mockery or things like that should be addressed and handled. The emotional experience is not going to mimic the same scenario for every person, and the parts of it that are valuable, important, or may need to be addressed could be different for each person too. And there are a wide, innumerable number of ways that we can get focused and put our attention on situations or circumstances in our homes, in our relationships with our kids, and in other types of things that then blinds us to other opportunities to connect. And so being open and being able to connect with our kids in the way that they experience is valuable. For us as adults, just being aware that our attention is selective and living with that as a reality and a truth for us positions us in a better place to connect with our kids' actual experiences. Consider another example. How much information is thrown at us every day online? How to parent, what to do about vaccinations and healthcare, what to do about safety for our children, how to keep our kids healthy, what to do about technology and access to that for our kids. In our best attempts to listen and tune into the right information, we sometimes can become convinced that we have the answers and that we have established what is true and real. And it can really throw us if we don't get the results we're seeking because we have honed in and paid attention and focused on certain areas while others may be producing results that we weren't going for or that we weren't hoping for. The researchers of this selective attention study, in subsequent interviews, they shared some other insights. By the way, they wrote a book about it that's for the public. It's not a research-based book. It's based on their research, but it's not a boring, dry research. It's called The Invisible Gorilla, and it's a really good and practical unpacking of the dynamics as they see them on this study. But as they were sharing other insights, specifically I was reading an article in an interview with Shibley, one of the two researchers. And one of the insights that was shared, they asked about the people who did see the gorilla. Why do some people see the gorilla? And Shibley said that they had to assume that there's some type of trait related to the broader awareness and seeing things that come into play, picking up on those things. And in future studies, they, you know, redid certain types of studies and they looked for this. They learned that once someone had been exposed to this type of information, as I said earlier, they were more likely to pick up on it later and they missed fewer things. Knowing what I know about brains, it tells me that we can widen to be more flexible in what we take in. Also, and this is my assumption, but I will tell you, when I watched the video for the first time, I didn't see the gorilla at all, just like most people. And I have to think that people who are like that, I know I have the tendency to get really focused on counting correctly. It was very important to me to see if I could count the exact number of passes, and I hyper-focused on that. So I have to think that people who are dedicated to maybe getting the right answer or really tuning into what they're told they're supposed to focus on, that maybe we could be even more prone to missing other elements than people who are not as, as prone to hyper-focusing when they feel like they have a task at hand. That's not necessarily bad. It's not good or bad. It is what it is. But the more that we can be in tune with how we are as a person and how we do things, the more we can balance with really effective humility to enter spaces in that way and not just assume because I have the ability to focus well and pay very good attention that I'm always focusing and paying attention to the right things. So this research study is really more it's more important to be aware of this than it is a particular piece of here are steps on the ground that you need to do. It's a suggestion to be mindful and grow in humility of our limitations as humans, to pause when we believe that we're certain and remember that overconfidence causes major pitfalls in our ability to connect with others. It also urges us to ask more questions about people and their experiences, including our significant others and our children's experiences. We might be surprised by what we hear. All in all, the researchers in their book summary says the call is for people to read it and be less sure of themselves, and that may be a very good thing. When we look at the world today and how certain people tend to be and how hypervigilant oftentimes people can be in the certainty of what they know, we see how dangerous that becomes in terms of losing our sense of humanity and losing our sense of taking care of others, caring for others, and connecting to others. We stop prioritizing that over the ability to be right and certain about our rightness. And I'm convinced that that is the root of a lot of issues right now that are going on in the broader scope. So I hope that this study has given you something really fun to think about in light of the way that it has been taught, but also something that deepens your ability to consider the authenticity of our connection and our openness to what's being perceived or attended to by ourselves and others. Thanks so much for listening, and hope you tune in for the next episodes in this series. Thank you so much for listening to Remodel Parenting. If you know someone who could benefit from this episode, I hope you'll share it with them. And if you love what we're doing, like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you have topics you'd like to hear about, email us at info@theremodelproject.com.